Hello and welcome to The Hearing. I'm John.
And from Chicago's North Side, I am Scotto.
And without any further ado, on to this week's album, which is from 2016, Puberty 2 by Mitski. Mitski Miyawaki is an American singer-songwriter who released her first two albums, 2012's Lush and 2013's Retired from Sad, New Careers in Business. That was quite a title. Released both of those independently. Puberty 2 is her fourth studio album, the first released by Dead Oceans. Her third studio album, Bury Me at Makeout Creek, was released by Double Whammy. Gotta love some of these independent label names.
Yeah.
Puberty 2 was released on June 17th, 2016, produced by Patrick Hyland, and features Mitski on vocals, with all of the instruments being played by Mitski and Patrick Hyland. Remember, I don't edit any songs into our reviews for copyright reasons, but on our blog at John and Scotto, you can find links to Puberty 2, johnscotto.com. You can find links to Puberty 2 on Spotify and Bandcamp, so you can follow along if you'd like. Yes, this is another one that's on Bandcamp. On to track one, Happy. The drum machine was kind of annoying at first, but I was okay when it faded. Everything else came in.
Right, I was going to say, it's kind of there throughout the whole thing, really. But
But they fade it really low when the rest of the arrangement comes in.
And, you know, it's on for, like, the first whole minute where you're just like, there isn't much going on, but...
Just a vocal and this just repetitive kick drum.
And this entendre, you know, intro with this... But even when she does a double entendre, it's still sad.
Well, yeah. I did like the nice sparse arrangement in the beginning. This and a handful of other songs on this album very much remind me of St. Vincent.
Yeah. And just the way this one escalates, though. Yeah.
Get a nice bass tone. I love the sax sound.
Yeah.
Don't expect sax on an album like this.
It's this one, like when she uses it, it has a very Bowie feel to it, you know, from like the late 70s kind of.
It's this big, loud, obnoxious sax sound, but
it's a honking sax.
It's very brassy, but I love it in this arrangement because everything pushy. Else is so ethereal.
You get like the, you know, usually like, you know, the 80s sax where it's all like sexy and stuff. Mm-hmm. Where this is kind of like a duck.
Yeah.
Just kind of like intervening into the song, and you're just like, wait, what?
It's kind of along the similar lines to Muddy Waters, I Just Want to Make Love to You. Little Walter's harmonica solo comes in. And if you've never heard it, you won't believe this about a harmonica solo, but when it comes in, it is the scariest thing you've ever heard.
Okay.
This harmonica, wailing harmonica just comes in, and it's terrifying. It's kind of similar in this. It's just this obnoxious loud sax in the middle of this very ethereal song.
And yeah, I just love how this one builds from that stupid basic drum machine in the beginning kicking to this full-blown thing. But everything with her, it only lasts for like this short brief time, and you're like, then it just fades all away and you're like, but I wanted more.
I do prefer when the real drums come in.
Of course.
And I like the big distorted bass midway through.
Yeah. Yeah. It really gets to a point of rock from like this, you know, stupid drum machine in like two minutes time. But it's only a 3 minute song.
Yeah. Track two, Dan the Dancer. Nice groove on this one. I like the guitar sound. I like the breathy vocal. Nice drum sound. The B section came in just as it was starting to get monotonous for me.
Yeah. Like you know, I've thought a lot about this over the last week before we lead us. What her songwriting is so unusual about it. Because, like, most songs, I think, are like a house. You know, you get verses and choruses
There's a standard structure.
Stacked upon a foundation of, you know, bass line, riff, drums kind of thing. She doesn't make houses though. She makes sculptures. So you get these weird, you get these weird snapshots. You get maybe a verse and a chorus. At most, you're going to get an intro, verse, chorus, outro, one of each. That's it. You know, maybe a solo or a bridge somewhere in there, and that's it.
Her song structure, such as it is interesting. At this point, I kind of feel like she's still wearing her influences on her sleeve.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, easily. This is, I mean, like, I heard in the last track, I heard, like, some metric, too. But, yeah, you do hear St. Vincent throughout.
Yeah, she's very Annie influenced, which, you know, I love Annie's work, so that's not a bad thing.
But Dan the Dancer, of course, you're getting that late 70s sound, that keyboard, you know,
Pink Floyd. There's a nice distorted synth.
Yeah, and it just circles throughout, and and that one's just, of course, you get the single verse and what would be a chorus in a most normal song, but except that's it in the end, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of the intro, outro, or a verse and a chorus, and the song is done into this weird, trippy build.
And having written, you know, a number of songs myself, written quite a few recently, I have to say, I appreciate people who can write without that structure, because I have a tendency to fall into it.
Well, of course. I mean, it's just how we think, you know?
And it just makes life easier when you're writing music. You know, you have these, you know, effectively three sections that you go back and forth between.
So, yeah, sometimes she'll have two. I mean, sometimes she'll do four, but, you know, it's all over the place.
I mean, there's a reason Abacab was called that.
Although they said they never said that.
That's not the actual structure.
Right. They said they changed that structure, but that is the general structure of most songs,
right? Well, no, actually, Abacab is the usual structure.
Yeah.
There's usually, because that B is the is the chorus.
You're right.
There's usually a second chorus, then the bridge. And then it's usually just the chorus. There's usually not a third verse. But anyway, I recently deliberately used Abacab as a structure in a song, just for fun. On to track three, Once More to See You. The drums in this one are very Leader of the Pack at the beginning,
at least.
I have
that in my notes, too. You get this Leader of the Pack, mid-60s kind of beat. Or, of course, you could say Jesus and Mary Chain, but they took it, too.
Right. But nice bass tone. This one specifically, the melody reminds me of Annie.
Yeah, there isn't a chorus here at all in this one either.
It's a nice eerie synth sound, some really nice harmonies.
You know, she just kind of muses. I mean, we get close to a chorus with the Pinky Promises, but it's really just about the feelings of desperation and longing that you get throughout this. It's probably one of the weaker tracks on it, I would say.
Coincidentally, on to track four, my pick for weakest, Fireworks. The drum machine and acoustic are an interesting mix, but the chord progression really reminds me of Violet by Hole.
Oh. I'm trying to think of Violet. I don't remember Violet.
I'm not going to try to sing any of it, but it's... I actually had to go searching for, because I could remember that word, I couldn't remember the artist, and she borrowed it from Hole, the chord progression. But I do like the synth bass that comes in. I'm, at this point, getting a little tired of the song's ending with random noise. it's trick he pulls throughout the album.
I was thinking of this, we just did, like, you know, Guided by Voices and Sonic Youth, where they are kind of doing the same ethic, too.
Well, with Sonic, it's all noise.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a trick they use at the end of the songs. Yeah, that happened with Guided, but I think because it was so lo-fi, I didn't really register it as a recurring kind of gimmick they were using. It was just the vibe of the album. In this case, it registered as a gimmick she uses, like, almost at the end of every song.
This one, with this particular song, what I thought was interesting about this, it pretty much could be a punk song, but it's unplugged.
Yeah.
Which really, like, and then it elevates into this ethereal chorus of the one warm summer night, and that just gets repeated twice in the end. But it's as close to a traditional structure as you're probably going to get on here.
Track five, Your Best American Girl. Like the sparse opening, the groove on this one reminds me of Pumpkins.
I was thinking of Cake, but yeah, it could be a Pumpkins song too.
like the noisy guitars in the chorus. It's got some nice dynamics. It, you know, starts kind of mellow, gets very loud.
You get it's like a power ballad. And yeah, the Pumpkins would be a good call because, yeah, you could see, you know, how much Billy loved the power ballad.
Yeah.
Almost tried to take credit for inventing right. it.
And I got to say, you know, as much as she does pull from grunge bands, she doesn't do loud, quiet, loud. She just does quiet, loud.
Yes.
Track 6, I Bet on Losing Dogs. This has a nice vocal. I like how the vocal kind of messes with the timing a little bit. There's a nice distorted synth. I think the vocal does get a little lost in the mix. It's a little low.
I love this one. I'm actually going to pick this one for my strongest. It begins softly, almost incoherently, and then out of nowhere just launches into this anthem.
Yeah. There's this real nice like tremolo heavy synth solo.
And emotionally, it's just, you just get the most vulnerable feel on the album where it's just this strange, you know, thing about, I guess, being unlucky in love. I don't know.
On to track 7, My Body is Made of Crushed Little Stars. This is my pick for favorite.
It's good.
It's like punk folk.
Mm-hmm.
It's just guitar. I think it's probably a distorted acoustic. It's got this great lo-fi vibe. It's just noisy and upfront, and there's no drums or bass or synth.
And yet still melodic somehow.
Yeah.
It was kind of a weird card trick to pull off.
And it's just so... It's what I loved about Guided last week. It's just... Yeah. Completely lo-fi and thrown together, and I loved it. On to track 8, Thursday Girl. Good vocal, like the off-kilter groove, nice bass sound, like the nice snappy synth snare. Liked the synth and vocal solo at the end. She kind of sings along with the synth.
I mean, really, for me, this one is my weakest on here. It's a good ballad, but I just don't think I'm here for that.
Track 9, A Loving Feeling. Nice noisy acoustics, which is not something I thought I would say, but they kind of are noisy. Nice off-kilter groove, very catchy melody. It's probably the poppiest song on the album.
Right, it's country or it's 60s pop, or yeah, it's a mix of country and 60s pop. It's very, I feel Linda Ronstadt, you know.
Yeah,
it's so
that.
Easy to fall in love kind of thing, you know.
Like the synth sound, I like the sonic build in this one. I mean, she pulls this trick a lot where she starts off very quiet and gets loud.
Yeah.
But the build is particularly nice in this one.
But she's got this really crunchy sound with it too, you know, even though it is very poppy.
On to track 10, Crack Baby. I just have to think of Faith No More with that one. This one's nice and sparse, like the synth bass, nice groove when it does eventually find a groove.
It's her epic of the album.
Yeah,
you're talking nearly 5 minutes.
Just shy of 5 minutes is the longest track. the glitchy percussion throughout it is interesting. Nice use of feedback right before the second verse where it's just this little bit of an eerie noise.
Oh, yeah. The whole thing is just eerie as fuck.
Nice moments where the groove kind of slips in verse 2.
It's just very hypnotic, this one. This one was close second for favorite, I think, because just her vocal performance is definitely the best on the album.
But the sound effects at the end go on for like a minute. It was just too much for me.
You're left with these really desolate sound effects in the end. And just the whole concept of the song is that there's something you're introduced to through no fault of your own, and it has this strange control over your life and you don't even know why, and it's just this emptiness that you can't quite, you know, fill. So it's pretty eerie shit.
And finally, track 11, A Burning Hill. This one's got a nice melody. Like the synths in it, they give it a nice moody atmosphere. But the guitar part reminded me of something you'd hear in an Apple ad.
You know what I was thinking? This is the denouement, of course. It's Pigs on the Wing. It's like kind of the second Pink Floyd reference made on the album. And of course, Pigs on the Wing just kind of has that outro.
So obviously I know you're a big fan. I'm guessing you're gonna recommend it.
I would, you know, this is probably is not my favorite album of hers, but yeah, I would still recommend this one.
And I'll recommend it too. To me, it's just kind of okay, but she's interesting.
Yes, very much so.
And I know she's only done two albums since this one, so I don't know how far she's developed since then. But I feel like when she finally finds her sound, she's going to be very interesting.
Well, the thing with her is she's moving around still, you know.
Okay.
I feel the last album was more, it was more leaning towards pop. It was like a more Nile Rodgers kind of
Interesting.
influence in it. This most recent one, though, is just too pop for my tastes. It was, I mean, there's a very Phil Collins feel to it, and I was like, ha.
But I was watching her Tiny Desk concert the other day. Interesting, she uses an electric guitar just without a band. And
Yeah.
it's always odd to see someone do that. Bob Mould does that a lot, where he'll go out with just an electric guitar with no band.
I've seen Annie do it too.
It's an odd sound. Kind of works for her, but she
Yeah.
has this kind of, and it's interesting given the title of this album, this kind of angry kid vibe to her.
Oh yeah, definitely. But I think I like Bury Me at Makeout Creek better, or even Be the Cowboy, even though if it has more pop sensibility to it.
But, she's still, I think, probably finding her sound, but she's got some very interesting ideas. So when she
Yeah.
finds her sound, I'll be very interested. I messaged you when I was just kind of skimming the album and said this is going to be another situation like Actor, where an album is going to make me fall in love with an artist who, the odd song here and there didn't really do it for me. Didn't quite happen. I'm a little more interested in her music, but I don't know if I'm a fan yet.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it for Puberty 2. Until next time, we'll be reviewing Sonic Soul Surfer by C6 Steve. As I was explaining to you, C6 Steve is kind of an experimental version of ZZ Top in terms of his sound.
Well, that sounds interesting.
It'll be interesting. Until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.